on Friday. Thank you very much. Our next presentation is titled Pedometer Accuracy and Reliability at Slow Walking Speeds in Healthy Older Adults. And our presenters are Matthew, Katarina, Jennifer, Jessica, Emily, and Julia.
Thank you. So we did a research project on pedometers, and it was supervised by Dr. Janice Ng and Dr. Jeremy Ogle. So an outline of what we'll talk about today, we'll look at the existing literature, we'll go over the rationale for our study, our hypotheses, our methods, and then we'll discuss our results, and we'll have a question. So it's long been recognized that the Canadian population is aging. Many people are trying to stay active in their later years. Physiotherapists and other health promoters need to have objective ways of measuring physical activity in this population. And studies have shown that walking is the preferred method of exercise for older adults. So one method of monitoring walking activity that has been recommended in the literature is the use of pedometers. These are step counting devices that can be inexpensive, and they have been shown to increase physical activity by giving people a visual display of their activities. They have potential to be used in a variety of settings, including hospitals, nursing homes, and community. But research has shown that their accuracy varies depending on the internal mechanism that they use and walking speed that is used. Additionally, very few studies have been conducted which look at slow walking speeds. And elderly individuals and others that would benefit from exercise likely ambulate at slower speeds than healthy or more fit individuals. So for the purposes of this study, and for most of the studies that we reviewed, reliability refers to whether a pedometer is consistently recording the same number of steps over multiple trials. And accuracy is how closely the pedometer counted steps correspond to the actual number of steps measured by a gold standard. So gold standard aims to provide the actual number of steps and could use a hand count, a video capture, or an accelerometer. The three main mechanisms used in pedometers for measuring steps are a coil spring or lever arm, which respond to vertical displacement to close a circuit, and they require a minimal force of 0.35 Gs, a magnetic reed proximity switch, which again uses a magnetic switch to close a circuit, and finally, a piezoelectric mechanism, which has a crystal strain gauge that deforms under an inertia, and that records a step. It can measure accelerations in up to three planes, so it's been suggested that they would be more sensitive. So looking at the literature that exists, one study by Ciarto and colleagues looked at nursing home residents compared to community dwelling adults, and they confirmed that nursing home residents walk slower and have more gait defects than community dwelling adults. However, their population, their sample was also significantly older, so the nursing home residents had a mean age of 79, whereas the community had a mean age of 70. They investigated one pedometer, the Amex DigiWalker, which uses its spring lever mechanism, and they found that at the slowest speeds, it undercounted steps by up to 74%. However, it reached acceptable levels of accuracy at speeds above 0.9 meters per second. In this study, the authors didn't control for speed, they just instructed the participants to walk either slow, moderately slow, or fast, and this resulted in wide speed ranges of 0.35 to 0.48 for the nursing home residents and 0.87 to 1.02 for the community dwelling. And because these speed groups are so different from each other, it actually makes it difficult to compare between groups for just the effect of speed alone and not anything else. And additionally, they only tested the one device. So another study by Schneider and colleagues compared 10 different devices, including the ones that we used in our study. And they looked at both intramodal reliability, so within the same device, how accurate it is over sessions, and then they also looked at the accuracy at different speeds. So they were worn by healthy adults with a mean age of 34, and their self-selected speeds ranged from 1.29 to 1.9 meters per second. And the slowest controlled treadmill speed used in the study was 0.9 meters per second. So in this graph, the error scores are displayed on the y-axis with positive scores representing where a pedometer undercounted steps and negative scores representing overcounting. A shorter error bar indicates a smaller error, as seen in the new lifestyles, the Kens and the Amex DigiWalker, which were all within 3% of the actual steps. And the larger bars indicate more error, which is seen in the Sportline and the Omron pedometers. And these were within 37% of the actual steps. All the results were presented for a speed of 1.6 meters per second, and they showed that the piezoelectric mechanism, so the new lifestyles, and the DigiLocker were more accurate than the mechanical ones, with the exception of the MX. Another study by Melanson used slower speeds, like those used in the present study, and they compared spring lever technology to the piezoelectric technology. The graph shows the percent accuracy of the pedometer on the y-axis at four pre-selected treadmill speeds, as shown on the x-axis. The slowest speed, corresponding to 0.4 meters per second, the piezoelectric Omron, shown as the white bar on the left, recorded about 56% of the steps, so in this case, a higher bar indicates more accurate. And then the spring lever Walk for Life pedometer only recorded about 7.5% of steps. As the speed increased to 0.8 meters per second, you can see that the accuracy of both mechanisms increased, with the piezoelectric recording 98% of steps and the spring lever recording 52% of steps. So the Actihel accelerometer has been previously used by researchers as a gold standard for step counting, but a study of it looked at the accuracy in speeds ranging from 0.8 to 1.3, and they found that at the slowest speed, it had about a 7.4% error, and at faster speeds, it had less than 0.1% error. So the conclusions drawn from the previous studies suggest that piezoelectric pedometers and the Yamax DigiWalker are accurate in healthy adults at speeds above 0.9 meters per second, and that the Actihel accelerometer is the most accurate at speeds greater than 1.3 meters per second. The aim of the current study was to determine whether any of five commercially available pedometers with different mechanisms are accurate at recording steps at speeds less than 0.9 meters per second in healthy adults. The speed was chosen as it is reflective of natural walking speeds of older adults and those most at risk for health problems due to reduced physical activity. Additionally, the study aims to provide an objective measurement of activity for health promoters working with older adults. We hypothesized that there will be no significant difference between the pedometers in terms of their accuracy at the preset gait speeds of less than 0.9 meters per second in healthy older adults, and additionally that accuracy and reliability will decrease as speed decreases for all the pedometers, regardless of the mechanism that they use. Ethics approval for the study was obtained from the Office of Research Ethics at UBC, and all participants provided written and informed consent prior to starting the trials. We included subjects if they were over 50 years of age, able to ambulate 100 meters without using a gait aid, and had no musculoskeletal or neurological deficits that could impact their gait. They also all had a timed up and go score that was within the age-based normal value. We recruited participants from local senior centers and community centers, and then through further snowball sampling. And as you can see from the chart, we had 18 subjects, 6 male and 12 female, with an average age of 63.6 years. They met all the inclusion criteria. The instruments that we tested in our study include some of those that had been previously tested. So the Yamax DigiWalker uses a spring lever mechanism and is on the market for about $20. The Omron uses a magnetic switch and goes for about $12. The Sportline is a coil spring lever, goes for about $20. The New Lifestyles is piezoelectric and costs $75. And then the Actihel accelerometer, also piezoelectric, is over $500 when you get the downloading software and everything. So this represents a good variety of different mechanisms and reflects devices that have been used in previous studies to allow for us to compare between our study and other studies. The Actihel was included because it has been used as a gold standard and is commonly used in research studies of physical activity. Because it's much more expensive, we would anticipate that it would be more accurate. So in contrast to a pedometer that you might get in a cereal box, all the devices used in this study have the capacity to store data over multiple days, and it allows for input of weight and age information. So following collection of all the subject data and the tug scores, one unit of each model was randomly selected from our pool, and two models were worn at a time, one on each hip. The accelerometer was worn for every trial on the left hip. Subjects completed a series of 80-meter walking trials around an oval 40-meter track at pre-selected cadences. So the cadences were set by a metronome. We had the subject walking in time to the metronome beats. And Mikitas has corresponded to walking speeds ranging from 0.3 to 0.9 meters per second. And these are reflective of the self-selected speeds of the nursing home residents in the CRTO study, and are also at the lower end of the self-selected speeds of community dwelling older adults. So we hope that our speed range would be reflective of the normal older adult population. To minimize any effects of fatigue or learning, the speed order was randomized for each subject. Practice trial at the slowest speed was provided so the subject would get used to stepping in time with the metronome and could familiarize themselves with the course. For each trial, two researchers followed the participant and manually counted steps with a tally counter, and this was used as the gold standard in our study. We measured the time to complete a three meter portion of the tract and then used that to calculate the subject's gait velocity. And steps were recorded from all the devices between trials, which meant we had to remove the ActiCal and download the data to the computer in between each speed trial. And then the four trials were repeated with the last two models of pedometers so that all four pedometers were tested. Here you can see images of the setup of the walking track and the two researchers recording data. I'll now pass it over to Jen to talk about our statistical analysis.
Thanks, Emily. Now, in order to organize and make sense of the data that we've collected with each subject, the statistical program SPSS version 11 was used for data analysis. We were able to perform the following analysis with the data: the repeated measures ANOVA before between speed conditions, mean percentage error for each pedometer at each speed, blind Ullman plot for graphical representation of the deviation from the gold standard, and also lastly, two-way mixed intra-class correlation coefficients, which are the ICCs, 3.2 for within brand reliability. Now, to even begin consider the pedometer's reliability and accuracy at different speeds, we need to show that we are actually putting them to test under different speeds. So a repeated measures ANOVA was done to show that the speeds that correlated with each cadences that we set are significantly different from each other, which they were, with an F value equaling 157.38. The cadence of 50 beats per minute correlated with a mean velocity of 0.46 meters per second. 66 beats per minute correlated with 66 meters per second, conveniently. Now, 80 beats per minute correlated with 0.85 meters per second, and the self-selected speed for our subjects equaled to 1.3 meters per second. Now, even though we actually manually double-checked that each pedometer was working properly prior to our study, there were still trials where the pedometers did not register any steps. The failure to register steps could possibly be attributed to the pedometer's lack of sensitivity at slow speeds, or the subject's potential change in gait patterns due to having to walk at such a preset cadence. All right. Now, before we can use SPSS to analyze the step count results, the raw data was first processed by eliminating the trials where the pedometers actually registered zero. Now, Manson and colleagues in 2004 went through a similar process with their data in order to minimize the skewing of percentage error scores. Now, the number of trials eliminated was recorded as an alternative method to demonstrate another aspect of pedometer reliability. Now, of all the pedometers, the Omron pedometer had the highest amount of trial removal, totaling at 18 trials removed across all speeds. Now, across all the speeds tested, so we're looking at the rolls horizontally, at 50 beats per minute, which is the slowest speed, at the most amount of trials removed, totaling at 14. We were unable to calculate ANOVA to investigate the interaction between speed and error scores due to the drastic unequal sample size for each pedometer at each speed. For example, as 44% of the trials were removed for Omron at 50 beats per minute. Now, percentage error were calculated for each model at each speed. This indicates the amount of steps that were undetected by the pedometers when compared to the actual amount of steps taken, as counted by the investigator by hand. At 50 beats per minute, the pedometers undercounted anywhere between 45 to 69% of the steps. At 66 beats per minute, they undercounted between 34 to 44% of the actual steps. At 80 beats per minute, anything from 10 to 25% were missed. And lastly, at the self-selected speed, the pedometers only undercounted 2 to 14% of the steps. To sum up the previous table in the graph, it's easy to see with the downward slope that the percentage error of all the pedometers decreases as speed increases, which also means that the accuracy increases as speed increases as well. Now, there's no one particular pedometer that performs obviously better than another pedometer at any speed. This next graph here conveys the same message, with the steps count average across the devices for each speed. Now, we also made blind almond plots to give a graphical representation of the agreements between the pedometer counted steps and the actual hand counted steps. On the y-axis is the difference between the pedometer count and hand count. The lower down you are on the graph, the more steps were undercounted. The closer to the to zero, the x-axis, the closer the pedometer count is to the actual gold standard count. The positive and negative limit line, which is the lines that you can see dotted lines, represents the mean of all the pedometer counts, plus and minus 1.9 times the standard deviation score. And this blind almond plot from Schneider and colleagues in 2003 represents an accurate pedometer trials that produce highly agreeable step count compared to the gold standard, where this is our blind almond plot for one of the five pedometers. You can see that at 50 beats per minute, well, most of the data points are down here in the dark blue diamonds. Some is counted as much as 170 steps per trial. And as we get closer to the self-selected speed, which are the light blue X's clustering around the X-axis, it shows that as we get as the speed gets higher, the accuracy of the pedometers becomes better. I'll hand it over to Julia.
So in previous literature, it has been suggested that piezoelectrical or accelerometer-based pedometers are superior to pedometers with mechanical mechanisms, such as those with lever arms or magnetic switches. Looking at interclass correlation coefficients in the current study, the within-brand reliability is greater for both types of piezoelectric pedometers, the New Lifestyles 2000 and the ActiCap, with coefficients of 0.98 and 0.81, respectively, as compared to the mechanical pedometers with coefficients ranging from 0.26 to 0.70. Additionally, there were narrow 95% confidence intervals for the piezoelectric pedometers as compared to the very wide intervals for the non-piezoelectric brands. For example, the Amex DigiWalker 200 had a confidence interval of 0.20 to 0.89. It is important to note that these numbers only reflect reliability the highest self-selected speed, which were greater than 0.9 meters per second. ICCs for the slower speeds were not reported due to high variances, leading to a lack of correlation. Ryan and colleagues found similar results to the current study with respect to pedometer reliability and type of mechanism. For example, the ActiCal, which is similar to the ActiCal, had a very high ICC of 0.99, whereas the two mechanical pedometers, the Yamex DigiWalker 200 and the Omron HJ109, had very poor ICC values of 0.01 and 0.48. However, these values were determined for only quote unquote slow self-selected speeds, and the authors did not report the value of this speed. If you look at mean percent error as a measure of pedometer accuracy, you can see from our study that the New Lifestyles 2000 had the higher percent error at the slowest walking speed of 0.4 meters per second out of all pedometers tested. Furthermore, the New Lifestyles 2000 had a larger percent error than the Yamex SW701 at the same slow walking speed as shown by Furlanetto. Interestingly, the ActiCal, which has been used as a gold standard in many previous studies, had a higher mean percent error at the fastest walking speeds than all other pedometer brands at the same speeds. From the results of our study, we find that the piezoelectric New Lifestyles 2000 and ActiCal mechanisms were no different in accuracy at slow walking speeds. These data bring into question the use of ActiCal as a gold standard for step counts. In a review by Bassett, it was noted there was conflicting evidence of inter-device reliability for the ActiCal, where Welk and colleagues determined that the ActiCal had the lowest inter-device reliability, whereas Esslinger and colleagues determined it had the best. Our current study has shown that the Acticel is no better or worse than any other pedometer, even at the fastest self-selected speeds. So what may be contributing to this variability of results across different studies? One hypothesis is that our study, we used a short track of 80 meters and recorded steps over a relatively short time, approximately 2 minutes. Accelerometers are designed to record activity over a longer period of time. Therefore, using the accelerometer as a snapshot of time may not represent the accelerometer's true capabilities. Coming back to our hypothesis, from the results of our data, we accept our hypothesis that all pedometers are less accurate at slower speeds, and there was no significant difference between pedometer mechanisms. Some of the limitations of our study include the use of only a few units per gram, between two or three. Additionally, the length of the track was only 80 meters. Such a short track could potentially lead to an inflation of percent error. Our study aimed to preferentially recruit healthy older adults without any gait impairments. These adults would normally walk at a faster rate than their age match on healthy older adults. By forcing these adults to walk at vastly reduced speeds through the use of preset cadences, their gait patterns may have been affected. Lastly, the study used a sample of convenience as recruitment occurred near the university. So why is our study different? First, we looked at gait speeds that are more representative of older adults. Only a few studies to date have looked at speeds that are appropriate for this population. Secondly, our study looked at walking over ground instead of using a treadmill to set a certain walking speed. It has been previously shown that treadmills alter normal gait patterns and therefore may potentially lead to pedometer inaccuracy. Additionally, the treadmills were not preferred mode of exercise in this population, and walking over ground is more representative of real-world conditions. Thirdly, the mean age of our participants is closer to our target population. Previous studies have looked at walking speeds using only young participants. Furthermore, our study looked at pedometer brands of different mechanisms, allowing us to compare reliability and accuracy based on internal mechanism. And lastly, we examined the use of Acticel accelerometer as a gold standard. Some potential future directions include looking at pedometer accuracy in a more realistic environment instead of a constrained lab setup, looking at reliability of ankle versus hip-mounted pedometers at slow speeds, validate the mathematical correction factor for missing steps proposed by Ichino Seki Sakin in 2006, alternative outcome measures for recording physical activity in slow-walking older adults, and lastly, investigating pedometer accuracy and reliability in slow-walking older adults with gait impairments. So with that, we would like to thank Dr. Janice Eng for her directions and feedback, to Dr. Jeremy Noble for his many hours of guidance, and we thank him for actually showing up here today. And to Chia Kami for organization logistics, and to everyone in the Rehab Research Lab for allowing us the time and space to conduct our trials. And lastly, to all our participants that voluntarily provided their time so that this study could be realized. All right.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Great study, by the way, but you already discussed that causing patients to walk at certain gait speeds might have caused them to alter their gait. While you were observing them, did you really notice any trends in what they were doing in gait deviations? Was it obvious to your eye?
That was one thing that we addressed in our paper, is that although we felt that we were being the least intrusive that we could be in terms of their altering their gait by just giving them a cadence and basically telling them step in time, but you know, if you miss a beat, it's not the end of the world. We did notice several trials where people really had trouble stepping to the beat and would really exaggerate their steps or do something kind of funny. And so that's kind of why we built in that practice trial, is because if we noticed this kind of stuff when it was happening, we'd say, you know, just relax, you know, try and pretend that you're just walking normally, and we would maybe give suggestions But in the end, like after the practice trial, if it continued to happen, we just took that data. And the other thing that we noticed too was, in terms of self-selected speed, the instructions that we gave to participants are, you know, we want you to just walk normally as if you were, say, walking down a street, you know, going grocery shopping or something like that, not racing after a bus or something like that. So that was another thing that we noticed, is there was a huge amount of variability in terms of how people walked for their self-selected speeds. We also felt that people probably tended to walk faster because they were maybe being examined. So there were definitely variations, that's for sure.
And I think a couple of things that we really noticed was that, especially at the slower speed, people have an exaggerated heel strike. And because after the heel strike, they have to stay in the position for so long before they take a second step, that people tend to make a comment that at the slower speed, they do find that their balance is more affected than they would walking at their normal speed. And as the speed increases, that problem seems to have gone away as that happened.
I was wondering if you looked at any of the popular gait speed measures, like that Nike Fit, Nike Plus iPod stuff, if you saw any papers that looked at that or considered using that in your trial, because it is pretty common.
There were actually no papers that we came across that had anything to do with that.
And my second question was, I was wondering if you found any correlation between height and accuracy of the measure, because you said, are they all hip-mounted ones that you found, and you didn't look at any ankle-mounted ones?
No. I didn't come across in the literature any difference with height or leg length. However, one of the proposed future research is looking at ankle mount versus hip mount. An ankle-mounted pedometer, the longer the leg, the greater the lever, so there's more acceleration at the ankle. So there's a suggested likelihood that it would detect that acceleration versus at the hip. However, it's just something for further research to look at.
Two of the things that were kind of noticed in research, at least, that they felt would contribute to errors in pedometers was if someone had a gait impairment, say they had hemiplegia on one side, and that would cause less acceleration, which might throw off the pedometer. And another area that they looked at is not necessarily leg length, but BMI. So if somebody had a higher BMI, that could potentially interfere with the pedometer as well, because there may not be as much movement at the waist.
Any other questions?
Would you recommend a hip-mounted pedometer in healthy older adults as a mechanism for lifestyle modification?
I would say yes, because there's already been research showing that it does improve physical activity in older adults. So there's already been research.
If you think about it too, like most of the pedometers seem to undercount steps, and if anything, that's going to motivate people to try and take more steps. So, so it's probably not really a bad thing.
But if you're
trying to use it for research where you want something that's accurately measuring, then you need to find something that's actually going to record the right number of steps. For our purposes, it's probably okay if it's a little bit under.
Erin?
Do any of your recruits use pedometers?
Can you say that again?
Do any of your recruits actually wear pedometers for their own purposes?
Well, most of them are actually avid walkers, because some of the people that we've actually were able to recruit were from community walking clubs, so they have experience in exercising and walking at their leisure. Whether or not they've actually used pedometers in their exercises, we didn't investigate that. But they seem to be all be genuinely interested in finding out how it is that they're doing and using the pedometer as a feedback.
Anecdotally, I can think of a couple of participants that said they use cereal box ones, and that was like common. Is that these come from cereal boxes, right?
So what cereal do we have to buy?
Special K. It has the heart health symbol on it. Oh, and there's an iTouch or iPhone app for pedometer you can download. And we didn't look or find any research that looks at the accuracy or reliability of those.
Any other questions? none of those of the cheaper brands were the ones that, you know, the government BC participation people give out, was it? I mean, I don't know if they're brand names. I think they're worth only about a few bucks.
Well, I wouldn't go the answer to
that. Yes.
I'm guessing there's not much research on the cereal box type ones, but they're pretty prominent. Do you think there's any value to having future research on the accuracy, like what the impact is if someone were to maybe even just be more encouraged, but is it overcounting or undercounting? It's not for research purposes, but just for the general population.
So I think an accuracy study might not actually be helpful because it would probably be quite poor, but I think what be more interesting to see is how it impacts that person's lifestyle rather than how many steps that it actually records. That's the more important measure in that situation.
But there was one study that looked at the Special K pedometer compared to, I think it was the Yamex, and they found that it was rubbish. It really undercounted steps. So.
That being said, if you like paid attention to how much each of those pedometers cost, there was a range between like $12 and over $500. And for us to find that, you know, there's really not one that's more reliable than the other, I think you can make your own decision in terms of if you were to go out and purchase a pedometer, what one would you choose?
Of course, that's always the issue of loss, isn't there? You know, and people invest in something that's $100 or more, they're so easy to misplace or drop.
Another question.
Sorry guys, so many questions. You said one of the strengths of your study is that you measured overground walking instead of treadmill walking, but you did have them walking with a metronome. So did you find any studies that actually said that overground walking with a metronome, especially at really slow speeds, would be more accurate or more like normal walking than walking over a treadmill?
We're the only study that's ever done that. So.
You even said, kind of subjectively, that you found that their gait was really off when they were walking.
Yeah, I know, and it's trading it from one for the other. And you're right, because treadmill walking affects your gait, but so to a set cadence.
So did you look at any, there's no walking trials with metronomes ever?
We're the first one. So. When they do overground walking, they do they just ask for self-selected slow, medium, fast walking.
So that was our way of controlling and to really get things down to that really, really slow end of things to look at whether or not the pedometers are still accurate at that range.
The increased error that you observed at those slower speeds, to what degree did you attribute that to sort of acceleration issues? You know, somebody who decides they have to go slowly, so they might do that and then put their foot down, or they might bring their foot through more slowly. What proportion do you think that contributed to you? That explained almost completely, or do you think there were other factors?
Well, we were hoping to use a practice trial to eliminate any funky walking, so to speak. And we didn't specifically look at that point, as the participant were going through the trials, we felt that their gait pattern, even though it might be awkward for them, were acceptable within the range of normal. And so at that point, we weren't as much concerned with them flicking their legs or wobbling their hips as they walked. Mm-hmm. And so in our analysis, we didn't really take that into consideration. But it was pretty standard across all the pedometers that at the slowest speed, which would be randomized speed, the order of speed in which we did the trials in, that regardless of what order they did in, the slowest trial for all pedometers all have problems with accurately counting steps. So we didn't think that that was a factor that attributed greatly to the amount of error that pedometers exhibited.
So there was you didn't influence the strategy in any way with any direction. They were with self-selected strategy in terms of how they walked at that slower speed.
The instructions were walk as normally as you can.
You can in time.
And it's hard to take apart the interaction between the altered gait and the decreased G-forces. So we can't actually say for certain which is a greater component. You can't do that kind of analysis.
That being said, we also didn't control for step length, and that would be something that would influence acceleration. So some people's strategy was to take the same large steps that they normally would at their self-selected speed and kind of like balance on one foot and hover before they swung their leg. And other people's strategy was to take more steps over 80 meters so that they, I guess, you know, weren't hanging out waiting to take the step. And we did interfere with that, but those are just things that we noticed. So step length definitely changed, but that's not something that we could really control in the study.
Maybe you mentioned this in future research, but would there be any benefit to, I can imagine that there would be, but what would be your thoughts on going to, say, a nursing home and recruiting participants who actually have that super slow natural walking speed, and, you know, even if they're using a gait aid or anything like that, and being able to kind of implement the study, that might help clear up some of these issues.
I think the problem is at this point, they haven't found that any one particular outcome measure is accurate for research at the people walking in that speed and using gait aids and things like that. So by doing the research in that area, you wouldn't be getting an accurate result that would be able to provide you with any significant conclusion to draw from. For example, you know, we're doing our study with people without gait impairments, but at the slower speed, we're looking at 69% error. So with people that are walking even slower and have gait impairments, the results, we would not be looking at anything significant. So there would either need to be a change in the pedometer's internal mechanisms for them to become accurate, or there has to be some other outcome measures that needs to be devised or invented or discovered to be able to use on them to have any meaningful results, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a couple of studies that we looked at have recruited subjects that do require gait aids. Yeah, I think one of the studies by Sierra in 2003 also looked at people using gait aids as well, but their reported percentage error was through the roof, even higher than our study. So there might be a problem looking at that at this point.
I think it's definitely something that's worth looking into. Yeah, I mean, like, to do it in the actual population that you're trying to use it in, but usually you try and validate it in a healthy population first, and then once it's valid there, then take it out. So it's kind of, we're still waiting for a better device maybe to come on the market.
Mm-hmm. Just a point of clarification, I seem to have mentally missed a chunk of your methods. How many people did you actually look at?
18.
80.
18.
Oh, 18. Okay, 18. And these were screened for the absence of musculoskeletal and pains and shin splints and fasciitis and whatnot. So can you just run through very briefly the research design again? For example, for the repeated measures, I mean, would you take off the, I presume it was within and among the pedometers. So did you take the waistband off again and then reapply it?
Yeah.
So every time it was done. Okay. And some of these are, you know, I noticed that you had it was truly on the waist. Many people tend to stick it in a pocket or on a pocket. What are the instructions given by these pedometers, and are they all comparable? And I noticed actually, I guess it was positioned, what landmarks did you actually use?
They said we follow the manufacturer's specifications, okay, which is in the midline of the thigh and at the waist. And the waist is defined as the narrowest part of your body.
And then there was a belt that was provided to us by the lab that allowed us to clip all the pedometers that we needed to use onto the belt so that we can adjust it to the position that satisfied the manufacturer's instructions.
Right. And you weren't concerned that they weren't on the same spot?
But what do you mean on the... Oh, we randomized...
Oh, they were in positions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there were also studies done before indicating that putting the pedometers on the left hip or the right hip did not significantly...
Affect
the results, yeah. Mm-hmm. Unless there were heavy patients. Okay.
Any other questions? And I presume you're going to prepare this for publication. Do you have a journal selected?
Yes.
Which?
Jeremy?
I think we discussed a few, I think. Which what were we?
Genesis.
Like medicine, sports science,
something like that.
Yeah, like we were thinking initially just the Canadian Physical Therapy, but that's more of a low impact journal, so we were going to try to do more of a high impact journal. And it's still going to be about an 18-month process from the time that we submit it to all our revisions to the actual publication date. So it's going to be like 2013.
And what a reviewer will ask is, how did you decide on a sample size of 18?
Oh, I can answer that.
Oh, good.
we're prepared for that one. 18 was the literature. There is no equation that can determine the power, or therefore the sample size for this type of research. So what we based our numbers on were previous study sample sizes. We would have loved to have more, but time constraints were. That was
a reviewer won't buy that. Okay, next
one. But yeah, no, but yeah, that is why in our case, we're coming to the end of this course and we have to wrap it up. But it is actually within the sample sizes that other previous studies have used. Yeah.
Any remaining questions? What about the clinical take-home message for these soon-to-be physical therapists?
If you guys want to use it on yourselves, that's great. If you want to give it to an elderly patient, warn them that it might not be 100% accurate.
Or don't, and so they walk more.
And one that costs $12 and $500, they work the same.
Well, thank you very much.